Hey, welcome to Heroes in Our Midst. I'm Michelle Sawatsky-Koop, and so far in our quest to find heroes from the inside out, our focus has been elite sport, yes, but we have found so many humans who have all walked different paths in life and faced different challenges and struggles and had unique victories along the way as well. As we continue to strive for diversity and not only to acknowledge it, but celebrate it, 23-year-old Nadia Crossman-Serb is our guest today. When I chatted with her back in the summer of 2020, Nadia had recently retired from her sport of paddling. This brought her to 8 World Cup and World Championship medal finishes, as well as 12 national titles. So, safe to say, one of the very best in the world. Combine all of that with her Métis Libyan background and her roots in the Muslim faith, she has quite the life story to tell. So I figured I'd start with the simple stuff. I asked Nadia to tell us about canoe kayak and what the sport is actually all about.
All right, so canoe kayak is basically like a track sport on water. We have like a start line and you are in these like skinny boats and you race down a lake or a river as fast as you can over a distance of 1,000 meters, 500 meters, or 200 meters. And the races can span from like 30 seconds up to like 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah, so kayaking is where you have two blades on your paddle and you're sitting down. And then canoeing is you're up on one knee and you paddle on one side. You've got one blade. So I did the canoeing bit.
So you were literally on your one knee.
Yeah.
That looks really hard.
Yeah, so when I started canoeing, it took me about like a full month to even get like 1 kilometer, like to stay in my boat for that long. You just like fall out for hours.
How did you pick this sport, especially because it was so challenging?
When I was around 6 years old, I live in South Osborne in Winnipeg, so there's like the Red River, and along the Red River is the Manitoba Canoe Kayak Center. So when I was like 6 years old, my mom really wanted to try kayaking. She always wanted to. So we like went out on a drop-in and like we both loved it. And my brother and I got into it. We just started becoming like the club kids. We were there all summer, all day, all night, like all year. And my mom was going to nursing school at the time, so she needed like cheap babysitting. So we just kind of disappeared for a while and she could kind of do her education and stuff.
How many brothers sisters do you have? Just the brother?
Yeah, I've got 2 brothers and 1 sister. But yeah, just my older brother Muhammad and I were really into paddling.
Tell me where I went from there. So of course at first your mom thought it'd be cool, it'd be fun to do, very casual beginning. Lots of us as parents put our kids in all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. How soon after this whole 6-year-old introduction to this sport of yours did you really start figuring out that this was something that you could do? And was your older brother also sort of adept at this sport?
I think I was around 10 years old. I had to kind of choose between hockey and paddling because I was really into hockey at the time. I wanted to be on the national team for hockey. But yeah, I think around 14 years old is when I got like more serious about it. But at this time I was kayaking, so I was sitting down with the two blades. So I kayaked from when I was like 8 years old up until I think 16 or 17.
Wow.
And then I would kind of hit a plateau. I wasn't improving. I wasn't really enjoying myself kayaking. I like wasn't like amazing at it. So I tried to canoe 1 year in Florida for a training camp. So I just like switched, and then all of a sudden I was like better than other people at something, and I just like loved that feeling, of course. So then that I kind of got a new life in canoeing after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so here you are, you're starting this canoe thing. You're a teenager, so you're pretty young, you're finding you have success. So you talked about though that first month or so falling out of the canoe. Was that at this time already or was that earlier?
No, yeah, that was at that time. I think around 16. I think it was just fun. Like, I was so used to going to training camps and, like, grinding my gears kayaking, but I got to kind of just, like, play in the water and fall in and have fun. Yeah, and then I got into it. And then I think that year we had Western Canada Games, and I got to canoe in that. And then I won, like, I think I won, like, 6 medals at Westerns for that. with my partner.
Wow.
So.
With your partner. Okay, yes. Explain that. So you weren't alone in the boat.
No. So most of my career and the bigger races I did were with a partner. So it's called C2. Mm-hmm. So singles is C1.
Okay.
And then there's a 4 as well, which is C4. So it's the same with kayaking. It's K1, K2, K4.
Okay.
So yeah, C2 and C4, that year Westerns, we did very well and got a bunch of medals.
Yeah.
So that kind of like was very exciting. My parents were happy and everyone was pumped. So
that was a kickstart to that. Exactly. So what happened after Western Canada Games? And were you still just training in Winnipeg? Was that kind of where you were centered?
Yeah, I stayed in Winnipeg at the paddling club with the crew up until 2013, and Westerns was in 2011. So, yeah, I had a good few years just with the provincial team, going to my first nationals and, like, seeing everybody else in the country was a shock. Seeing how good everybody else was just, like, a huge shock to the system as well. But yeah, my like national team career didn't start until around 2013, where that year at nationals I did like better than expected, and they asked me to go to a competition in Czech Republic called Olympic Hopes. So I was sent there. I got to experience like the national team vibe, where you get on a shuttle bus and you have the outfit, and yeah, that year in Czech Republic, I had a partner from Nova Scotia, and I think we got a gold medal. So that kind of also breathed new life into my career. I was like, oh, I can do this. I'm like not bad at this, or not as bad as I thought it was.
Were you thinking that really you weren't that good?
I think I always had that feeling. Mm-hmm. Still now, I think it's just like a part of my brain that I don't think I'm as good as I am at things, but... Yeah, I just wasn't, like, the best on even the provincial team at the time. So being able to go and kind of focus on one race was incredible, yeah.
What was it like being with this partner from Nova Scotia? How did you guys get together, and what was that like?
Yeah, that was also a very new feeling. But I think it's more common with canoe kayak because they tend to put the fastest people together. So you could be from BC and then your partner could be from Quebec, and they'll just try and put you together and see what happens.
Sure.
I think Olympic Hopes was like a smaller competition. So it was kind of just like a way to get 16 and 17 year olds to go to a big competition, get into the start blocks, because that was the first time I got into a set of start blocks. You put the tip of your boat into a metal kind of shield at the start of the race, and then it drops, and then you go. So normally you just kind of float at the line, and then you go. But this is like something you kind of push against, and it feels incredibly intense at times. So like just having that experience for kids is pretty good.
So that's sort of the international feel of that. So you said you won this national championship. Where are we at now in your timeline?
I am 17 years old. I think at this point I was getting more confidence in myself, and I was thinking, oh, I could actually compete in canoeing and like be good at it, possibly. I was dreaming a bit. So yeah, at that point I started training really hard, and then the next year I went to my first set of national team trials for junior world championships. And the whole year leading up, that's all I was thinking about. That was my like driving force for the whole year. And then I didn't make it. And that crushed me, but also was my greatest failure. It was eye-opening. At the time, it was horrible. But now thinking back, it was a great experience to go through. And then I just, like, pushed myself harder the next year. The year after that, in 2015, I kind of took a chance. I wasn't supposed to go to national team trials the next year. I was just looking into universities.
Yeah.
I, like, wasn't thinking that I would continue with paddling. So, yeah, in 2015, that set of national team trials, it was, like, the senior trials, so it was pretty serious. No one from my club went with me. It was just my mom and I went on a road trip to Gainesville, Georgia, and my coach showed up to kind of support me and help, and I just went there for 10 days and then raced, and I ended up being selected to go to my first world championships, my senior world championships.
So what happened at that, for in those 10 days? Did you all of a sudden just paddle best you've ever have? Did you make new times, or what got you selected onto that national team?
I think in those 10 days, it was just like my mom and I at the time weren't so close, but we just got like incredibly close in that week and a bit. We just got like, I don't know, we became friends.
Interesting.
Which, yeah, my mom and I were never friends really before that. We had a mother-daughter relationship, I guess. But, we got super close. She just supported me, like, whatever decision I wanted to, like, make. If I wanted to go do yoga or, like, I needed to go for a jog to train for trials, she would just do anything. And it was just a fun trip on the way back. We, like, went and stopped at different places, but...
What do you think spurred that? Like, what was the difference in those 10 days that you either noticed her support or that there was more support?
I think that we just got to know each other and spent time together. Mm-hmm. We've never gone on a trip one-on-one before that. So there were, like, no distractions from, like, other family members or things happening. It was just us trying to enjoy ourselves and me being all stressed up and, like, stressed and, like... high key. I remember at the time I would write down my day in a journal by 5 minute increments. I'd be like, brush my teeth, change my clothes, like get breakfast. It was insane, but it really kind of helped me release the stress of the race day.
Yeah. Interesting. A lot of athletes talk about what they can control and what they can't. It seems to me, you write those things down, you're in control of that. So at least that part of it, you have control over, and then you just go and hit your race day and you hit your race. And obviously, there was some great success there. So national team bound, there you are, senior national team. And you said you went to Worlds after that. What was that like?
That was incredibly fun. it was my first time meeting like a lot of these older people. I think it was not the current generation of national paddlers, but the last. It was a lot of past Olympians who went to Beijing in 2008 and London 2012. So I got to hang out with like a lot of my heroes, and we just like spent I think 2 or 3 weeks at this like castle in France preparing for senior worlds together. And I could just kind of eat dinner with them and ask them questions, and they were getting to know me as well. So, yeah, we had a lot of fun. I think, I was 17. Everyone else was, you know, in their 30s, I think, so.
That's pretty heady stuff. 17. So obviously, Nadia, you were an incredible canoer. I mean, your paddling was obviously world class at this point. And what made you a good paddler, do you think? Do I call you a paddler? Is that correct?
Yeah. Paddler is a lot of people get angry if you say rowing. I don't mind either way. Yeah, I just had this, like, I'm speaking past tense, I had this passion. I just had this love for, like, the feeling of the water and... I would just watch technique videos every day, and the fact that I got to meet some of the people in the technique videos at the time was incredible. Still in the stages of improving at that point, definitely.
Right. But. So then after that, so you do that Worlds, and results-wise, were you sort of where you thought you would be, and what came after that?
Yeah, I think that year we came sixth in C2 500s. Yeah, we were just figuring things out. Thinking back on that race, obviously so many things I could have done differently, but we came sixth and we just didn't know what to expect, so that was great.
So when you're on the start line though for that race, you just talked about like some of the people that were in these instructional videos or these heroes of yours. Did you look sort of next to you? Were they lined up with you, some of these people?
Yeah, there were definitely a few paddlers there that we were racing against, and I remember, this is terrible, but I remember, like, seeing them during the race. I was, like, watching them. Definite improvement to be made from that point on, for sure.
So where did you go from there?
I think after that, I was introduced to the national team system. So after that, I was more known. So they paid a bit more attention to me. But from there, I just, like, went home and kept training and kind of did my own thing. And then the next year, same thing happened again. Race trials, And then I went to, I think that year we went to World Cups and I think did very well. I think we got a gold medal at one of the World Cups in Czech Republic, which was the same race venue as Olympic hopes. So that was a,
yeah,
only win gold there. So that was good. And then from there we went to Junior Worlds and I think that was the Olympic year. So they didn't have a Senior World Championships that year. Right. So we just had under 23 Worlds and then we raced, I think it was in Belarus. So.
Now you are still in the C2 and you say we. Is it the same partner through this whole thing? And who was your partner?
Yeah, so my partner at the time was Katie Vincent.
Okay.
She is currently, she's always been an incredible paddler, but I think she has many world championships under her belt. I think, are both 96 babies, but she was just, like, from, I think, like, 12 or 13 up until now has been, like, the best in her age group.
Wow.
Forever. She's great. So, yeah, I think she is currently training and paddling with Laurence Vissel-Lapointe, who is like a 7 or 8 time world champion.
Wow. And you were in her boat, obviously helping her do amazing things as well. Mm-hmm. So you were right there with a paddler like that. Mm-hmm. So now you've done the trials and you and your mom have this, you know, bond and you did so well at that one. The second one already has come and the worlds and you have a gold medal under your belt mm-hmm. and Junior Worlds hit. And then where are we at now?
Yeah, I think from here we're just in the system. Are training all the time and racing every summer, so that kind of continues through 2017-2018.
And when did you retire from paddling?
Yeah, so I officially retired in November of last year. Mm-hmm. So I think I stopped training around then.
Do you remember your final race, the final competition you were in?
No, my retirement was a bit anticlimactic, I think, as maybe most are. It was during a training camp that I kind of left the team, I think. Okay.
Did you just know you were done?
Not really. I just was having like a really, really tough training camp. Mm-hmm. And we were doing a set of trials. And after we did those trials, like, I didn't make the Pan Am Games team at the time, okay. Which is what we were trying out for. So the national team coach kind of pulled me aside and asked me, like, if I was happy, like, what was I doing, what I'd like to do for the rest of training camp. And at the time, my old club coach was in Alabama, so we were in Florida at the time.
Okay.
So I had the opportunity to, like, catch a ride from Florida to Alabama. So I went to Alabama for a week, and from there, I just, like, went home and didn't go back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now did you get pressure? You know, I mean, you'd had some success for Canada and were you still with this partner at this time? Like how did that close off for you? Like do you have a closure as of yet?
I don't think I have very much closure because I've been avoiding reflection because it kind of hurts a bit to reflect on all the good things that have happened. And I heard this quote, I feel like it's from Claire Hughes or somebody. Somebody said this. But it's like living life dessert first and then later comes like lunch and dinner.
Yeah.
And breakfast and all that stuff. But I got to like experience my dream career from like 17 up until like 22 or 23. So just like living life and trying to figure everything out after that was a bit difficult.
And some might think at 23, wow, you know, what memories you already have. And like you say, maybe now it's tough to reflect on those things, but there was so much good in that journey of yours. Do you feel that you can grab some of all the hard work? And I mean, we've just touched on some of the highlights of your story, you know, some of those worlds and some of those trials and even like you said, the failure, right, of the Pan Am Games. Can you already start to see where you'll be able to take some of those pieces to move forward?
Yes, I think I can, like, I have been able to take all these lessons and internalize them. And I have learned a bit, definitely, in the last year on just what it's like to live as an adult. But yeah, this year I am looking forward to new things now, and My brother, Muhammad, the paddler, the other paddler, him and a few of our friends have started a nonprofit for Indigenous paddling in Manitoba. Hopefully it'll spread, but it's called Waterways, and I'm one of the coaches for that, so I'll be actually traveling to do that. I'll be running youth camps up in northern Indigenous communities.
Awesome.
And teaching kids and youth how to canoe and about water safety, and hopefully giving like some passion back into paddling that maybe some communities have lost, and just getting them equipment and facilitating canoe clubs and coaching, and hopefully they'll be able to run them themselves in a few years.
Well, and there could be some young people that would never have an opportunity and maybe really gifted in this sport, and from your experience you can pass that on to them. Are there highlights, Nadia? Is there a highlight in the story you've shared so far? Is there a highlight that you hold on to from your racing time? Is there a race that you especially remember feeling good?
There is like one paddle that feels like a highlight, because you never really get the feeling of like the perfect technique and the perfect everything coming together perfectly during a race. It's typically during like a random training session. So that happened, I don't even remember when, but it was on the Red River at home. There was a thunderstorm happening, which is, you know, dangerous. We paddled through thunderstorms and whatever happened, happened. But yeah, I think it was like a 500-meter time trial, and everything came together, and the weather was magical, and just how I paddled was incredible. So maybe I'll get back into it and feel that again. But
well, we're talking to you especially, diversity, in terms of even just you talking about bringing paddling to Indigenous people and to including them in that project of yours. And it's a project to bring paddling up north and to include them. You grew up in a Muslim home, which I would love to go back now. So now we know the heights you reached in your paddling and a bit of a difficult end for you, which that story is not even told yet or ended yet, because you're 23. You have story to write yet in your life, Nadia, and I think it's going to be pretty amazing, especially with this Waterways you were talking about. Let's go back now. And we know that paddling started for you young, 6 years old. Your mom took you and your brother, Muhammad. What was life like for you in Winnipeg as a Muslim family showing up at the canoe club? Did you notice? Was there any difference made? What was that like for you?
I didn't really feel at the time, or maybe ever, that I felt like different at the paddling club. Maybe there's like certain instances, just like in Winnipeg, because I did wear a headscarf at the time, so some like uncomfortable experiences definitely happened at many different points. But at the canoe club, no, it was very comfortable. I basically grew up with them. It was another family. I think I learned a lot from them, and then they in turn definitely learned a lot from my family and I. Yeah, because we were, I think at the time, the only family of color that were there at all. Yeah. So I think it was good for everybody.
Lead us through a little bit your upbringing. What does growing up Muslim look like?
Maybe like a distinct difference that I can think of is growing up with maybe stronger morals, if that makes sense. Growing up with no alcohol, like no drugs around. It really made for like a solid childhood. Yeah, so, and it's like a huge, like a very strong sense of community. So we would, in the summers, go to an Islamic camp and like just enjoy ourselves there. And we would weekly like go to the mosque, like most nights, for like youth, just activities and games. And it was just another family as well. So yeah, I think up until I was 12, that was my upbringing. I didn't really know many people outside of the Muslim community. We just kind of had our friends.
So like you say, you didn't feel a lot of difference. How about now? Now you're an adult, and what role does that play in your life now?
I'm not very religious now at this point in my life, but I still have like so many lessons that I learned from the religion. It's such a like a peaceful upbringing that I've got, I think, a strong sense of self and my own rights and wrongs. The other part of maybe growing up not fitting in one category, which is the Canute Club or a public school. I also didn't really fit in with the Muslim community because my mom is a convert and my dad immigrated from Libya in, I think, like 85. So being like half Métis and half Libyan, even in the Muslim community, was different because I had a half kind of white upbringing, as they would say.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my family, like, we were definitely just, like, on the fringes of both places. So, yeah, that's kind of where I sit. I sit on the fringes of a lot of different places.
And so, really, your paddling was a place to belong, which didn't really require you to sit anywhere but in your boat. Mm-hmm. Was that freeing for you?
Yeah, it felt like I belonged in that place, and it felt like I was connecting to, at some moments it felt like I was connecting to like something beyond me, like maybe my Métis ancestors paddled. My brother and I were doing some research and we found that on our Métis side, I'm sure this is very common, but we found that our relative paddled for Hudson's Bay, and he was the person who like steered the boat and like made sure everyone was safe. So just finding that out in the past like couple of years, we were very, very excited about, because we were like, wow, like no one in our family has ever paddled on either side. Like no one in Libya has paddled, I don't think, ever. And then no one from my mom's family has paddled. So just for us to kind of bring that back to our family was such a fun experience.
Did it give you almost a sense of identity then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that's what I learned when I stopped paddling was who am I without this? So I didn't realize that it was such a huge part of who I was. And now I'm kind of learning that I can be who I am without paddling or with paddling. But I'm just learning that it's a shame to let go of all of my knowledge of paddling and kind of just try and move on without using it for maybe some good.
Absolutely some good. Yeah. Nadia, and your experience, the experience that you can bring and the youthful energy, right? You're going to relate to these kids because you're still close enough to them in age. And man, you've put that oar in the water so many times and at such a high level. What are you most looking forward to now with this program that you are going to be starting up?
It's not about bringing paddling to these kids. Mm-hmm. It's more about them connecting to their own culture, because canoeing and kayaking is indigenous. And unfortunately in Canada, it's become such a white sport. I only know like maybe two or three other people of color in the whole country, and there are thousands of paddlers. So there are definitely some barriers there. But yeah, it's more about connecting these kids to some of their past. And you know, some communities still have a very strong sense of paddling, but others maybe not. So we just like to give them that support and that like option too.
I love how you set us on that course, even in what you just said there. You're not bringing this to them. This is theirs. Mm-hmm. And you just want to connect them to that. That's the kind of stuff that someone like you can bring to that program that is unique to many of us. What would you like to say to people about, let's not have just one race in a sport? How can we be better?
Great question. It's just, for me, I think it's just knowing the history of Canada and, you know, the people who are the rightful owners of the land and the water and the culture of canoeing and kayak, which brought Indigenous people together, and it brought them to harvest and like the fur trade. It just makes sense.
My last question before we hit some rapid fire questions is, you said that, you know, you had this memory, this great memory in that thunderstorm, right? You were paddling and you felt that, and you said maybe you would be back to it and feel that again.
Yeah.
Do you think there is a crack in the door of paddling where Nadia Crossman Serb will be paddling again? And I don't think any of us really have a concern, you know, will you be paddling for Canada again? But will you be paddling for Nadia again, do you think?
After coming back home, I spent like a solid year of bit of a deep depression and just wouldn't show my face at the paddling club. Yeah, I don't think anyone knows there kind of what I was going through, but I just felt like I didn't belong there either. But in the past few months, I started to go back for workouts and like showing my face a bit. So just getting back on the water like recently has definitely added a bit of goodness to my life now.
Yeah.
And it's not about being fast or good. It's just about connecting to nature again and feeling the water and all the other good things that aren't racing and trying to be the best in the world.
Feeling good inside. Mm-hmm. You're made for the water. It just fits with who you are. So we're glad for you. And we just hope that that continues. Thank you for being a part of that Waterways program.
If you're interested at all, the website is waterwayscanada.com. We have an Instagram, and yep, I think we're going to have a crowdfunding page up soon. So if you're interested in supporting us and helping us get life jackets and paddles, and if you're interested at all in supporting our communities, which are very much part of our country, yeah, please share and help if you can.
Okay, are you ready for some rapid fire questions? What is your favorite sound?
I really like the sound of the motorboat, actually. That just popped into my mind. The motorboat on the water, just like the coach's boat. Love it.
One piece of advice you want to pass along to others?
My piece of advice, or what I've learned, is that don't try to assimilate to culture, like the Canadian culture, if you aren't white, I guess. Mm-hmm. If you are a person of color or an Indigenous person, and my advice is to learn more about your culture and just be proud of who you are, because that's where you teach people about everything. So
yeah. Describe an ordinary moment.
I'd say my life at this point.
Who are two or three people who have influenced you, and how did they impact your life?
Well, I think it's hard not to be influenced by your coach. It's just like another parent. So I'd say Jerome Saramack is my canoeing coach from the club here in Winnipeg. He definitely influenced a lot of my life and like a lot of the decisions I made. And he just kind of taught me like all about canoeing and all about the hard work and enjoying the water and like the magic that happens on the water when you paddle just right. So. Mm. And then another person who's influenced me is, her name's Ayat Menena. She's a really good friend of mine. She's Libyan as well. And yeah, she's just taught me about so many things. And she's incredible. She reported on the Libyan revolution while it was happening and has done so many things and is still doing so many incredible things. So she's like a huge light in my life and is teaching me so much.
Nadia, what do you take away from the fact that in your young life, you were a world-class paddler, that you were right there with the best in the world? What does that mean to you, if anything at all?
I don't know if it means something, but it has been difficult to kind of realize, especially in the last year. Like, I've just been working as a barista at a local cafe for the past year or so. So you kind of become what you're doing. So all of a sudden, I was just this, not that baristas are just baristas, but I was this regular human being. And thinking back, I'm like, oh, I was one of the best in the world at something. So maybe it's difficult to kind of grasp, but it's such an incredible feeling as well.
Something you can hold with you. Yeah. And something that will never be taken away from you. And I'm sure that will stay true as you continue on your story of life. Your life, Nadia, which is far from ordinary. So we appreciate you joining us.
That's Nadia Crossman Serb, world-class canoe kayaker, and a young woman who is destined to make a huge difference, not only through sport, but through lived experiences and a passion to help young people celebrate where they come from and who they truly are. Check out waterwayscanada.com, another passion that just fits who Nadia is, a hero in our midst. If this story hit home for you and made you want to hear more, then share it, like it, and you can subscribe to Heroes in Our Midst. We think everyone should hear these stories, and you can help us make that happen. Thanks.